Yeah, one place you will not find me, though, Alan, is at a ham biscuit eating contest. I don't think that I'm man enough to tackle 9.5 biscuits. That's quite a few. Now, I think Michael Oliver is man enough to do it, though. I agree. I think Michael's got it figured out. The sheriff don't look big enough to eat 9.5 of them. I bet he's big enough to lay on the ground, though, so don't get no ideas. It's good to be with you all this morning. Love being down in Trigg County, KD's, and here in this area of the state. This is where ag is done in a big way, and we appreciate everything that you all do down here for our agriculture industry and our community that we've got. Like Alan said, I'm a full-time farmer. It's what I do for a living. Dad and I, we've got our cattle operation there in Garrett County, and we're in the greenhouse business, and then we've also got this pumpkin, and right now it's pumpkin season, so I want to tell y'all a few lessons that I've learned in the pumpkin patch over the years. And so I've got four kids. My oldest and youngest are adopted, and Casa is here this morning. Where's Casa at? Are they here, or were they just represented? You got pointed. Where'd you point to? Oh, they're not here. But anyways, Casa, court-appointed special advocates, is close and dear to my heart because they're volunteers that go in and help with foster kids and making sure that they're getting their voice heard in the court system. And I have two adoptive children myself, and so I've got four kids, two boys and two girls. My oldest and youngest are adopted. And something that I've learned in the pumpkin patch over the years is that there's a difference in boys and girls. If you all didn't know that, there's a difference in boys and girls. And the reason that I say that is because if I take my girls out to the pumpkin patch and we're out there, I've got pumpkins on my front porch, by the way, from about July till June the next year. I mean, they're there year round. I think they even make snowmen out of them in the wintertime. They'll put stuff on them and stack them up still. But if I take the girls out there, they'll get two pumpkins, they'll get in the truck, and we'll start heading home. And if you've got girls, you know what happens. They'll say, "Dad, can we go back and get two more?" Because they want to take them home and share with my boys. If I take my boys to the pumpkin patch and they get 30 pumpkins, them girls ain't getting a single one of them. They don't share. They're mean. There's just a difference. And so that's one of the things I've learned. I've also learned a few things that I think would be helpful for some of the men that I've seen in here this morning. Is that women like their pumpkins like they like their men. The uglier, the better. Those warty, nasty, scratched-up-looking pumpkins are the first ones that most of you women in here will go after. And so for all you men in here, Raymond, others, I mean, them ugly men, there's hope for all of you. But absolutely love pumpkins. That's my favorite crop that I've ever grown. And we've done about everything you can do. We've raised tobacco, hemp. We've done about everything, but pumpkins are my absolute favorite crop that I've ever raised. I also try, are y'all going to break the ham biscuit record this year, the biggest ham biscuit? You think you'll break it this year, Stan?
Sure.
Okay. Well, breaking records are really fun to do, if you can break one. And I've been trying to at least get a competitive giant pumpkin at the state fair for the last couple of years now, and I haven't. I'm not good at it. The winner this year was 1,621 pounds. You know how big mine was? 160. But I left the water running after I left the state fair and, on the farm. And so it's growed up my patch has where I had my giant at. And I went out there the other day and I measured one. It's about 400 pounds now. So I think the trick is forget about it. Don't go out there and look at it. Don't water it. Don't do any of the stuff. Just forget about it and it'll grow. But I just love what you all are doing here. Community-oriented opportunities that you've got. Coming together as a community is so important throughout our state, and having a festival like the Ham Festival and the community getting involved is just so important. I get to do a lot of really neat things as Commissioner of Agriculture, and one of those is work with folks like you all throughout the state of Kentucky. And I just want to highlight two people that I have in Frankfort that are on boards that I have that are from here in western part of the state. One of them is Lori Knoll, who sits on our Ag Finance Corporation Authority. And Lori does an amazing job representing agriculture and the banking industry to really help bridge the gap between especially young and beginning farmers who may not quite be able to get there to purchase land or equipment and some of the things that they're doing through traditional banking. But because of what we have at the Department of Agriculture through our Ag Finance Corporation, we're really able to help a lot of our new and beginning farmers especially and some other different projects that we work on. But Lori is an absolute amazing advocate for this part of the state, and can't thank you enough, Lori, for sitting on that board for us. And then also Mr. Wayne Hunt, who's back here in the back, the grandfather of all Kentucky agriculture. We appreciate you and the work that you've done on our Ag Development Board. Wayne is somebody who I lean on quite a bit. You know, whenever we've got an issue, a problem, or something that's happening, I can always count on Wayne to give me good advice and kind of historical opportunities of it. You know, right now, a lot of us are really nervous about where we sit in agriculture, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But Wayne, we had dinner the other night, and he said, "I've seen this 3 times in my life." He said, "We'll get through it. We'll get past it. It's never good, but I've seen this 3 times in my life." And, you know, the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun, and I think that's probably right. But just appreciate the calmness that Wayne brings to the table. He always reminds me whenever I'm getting nervous about stuff that they can't eat you. You know, they can do a lot of stuff, but they can't eat you. So, I mean, just calm down about it. Just appreciate that level of steady hand that Wayne brings to it. And then I've got one of our employees at the Department of Agriculture, a local guy here, Jesse Fry, who works on our Senior Farmers Market program. And I want to talk a little bit about that Farmers Market Voucher Program. I don't know if anybody in here participates in that, but we've got 12,000 seniors across the state of Kentucky that participate in that program, and it's an amazing program. He was telling me this morning, I think we're at 93% on our reimbursement rate right now, and that's just an extra added benefit for a lot of our seniors in the state who can't quite get some of the stuff that they need. You know, a lot of them are on fixed income from Social Security or pension plans and other stuff that they've had in the past. And when you think about where we were, you know, 60 years ago when some of them were in the workforce versus where they are now and what some of those checks may be through Social Security or the retirements, you know, we need to help as much as we possibly can, especially around protein intake and other stuff around our farmers markets. And so really appreciate the work that Jesse does at the Department of Ag around our food distribution and other stuff. We've got amazing employees that work every single day to really ensure that we're doing and providing the programming that we need to provide to help market, to help protect, to help do all the things that we do in Kentucky agriculture. And I can't do any of that without, because I'm in the executive branch. We execute what the legislative branch tells us to. And you all have got an amazing state representative in Walker Thomas and in Mary Beth Imes. And I can't say enough great things about those two individuals. I've gotten the opportunity to serve with both of them and the opportunity to serve with the lesser Imes, Kenny Imes, whenever he was there. I'm just teasing Kenny. I'm teasing. He's my man. But I love Kenny and Mary Beth and Walker and what they actually mean to the state. You know, being able to get business people there that have signed the front of the check, not just the back of the check, and understand community involvement and other stuff is really important. And they're always bringing new and better ideas to the table. And I just can't thank the work that they do enough. And I can't do anything without them. So I'm going to brag on them for just a minute more because you never know when we might need another budget funding request or something. So thank you all so much for the work that you all do every single day. And also working with your local elected officials. You know, Dunn mentioned Kenny and the work that he does over in Callaway County. But Stan Humphreys, your all's judge executive here, and your magistrates and your entire team. You know, local government on our cities and counties are so important, because that's where you all see them most. You know, I'm here occasionally, but you're not going to see me at the grocery store every day or the gas station, but you will see your local elected officials throughout this county and throughout this region. And so having good local elected officials to work on your all's behalf is so important. And we work very closely with the Kentucky League of Cities, with the Kentucky Association of Counties, to really provide context for agriculture whenever it's needed. And we've worked on a lot of stuff to help either attract or retain businesses in communities throughout the state, or work on behalf of defending our farmers in many cases with stuff that goes on. But I can't thank our local elected officials enough for the work that they do. It's a lot of times tireless and thankless work every single day. You know, nobody likes cutting a ribbon on doing a good job. You know, it's always new projects and stuff. But I do want to just say thank you to our local elected officials for the work that they do every single day. But at the Department of Agriculture, one of the things that I get to do is live a fairy tale life. I mean, I have every day that I wake up, I get to do something absolutely amazing and wonderful, whether it's be at events like this and be able to hear that somebody has eaten 9.5 country ham biscuits in 10 minutes. I mean, that is absolutely broke my brain this morning. Is that guy here?
No.
No. Okay. I'd like to meet him. I want to see what he looks like. Yeah. But that's just absolutely unbelievable to me, 9.5 country ham biscuits in 10 minutes. But, you know, back in May, I get to go to the White House quite a bit. I get to go to Washington and advocate on behalf of our farmers. And back in May, we had beef month. And whenever I went to the White House, I had lunch with Secretary Rollins, and we were in there. And I got there a little bit late, and they asked me what I wanted. They texted me, and I said, well, just get me a cheeseburger because it's beef month. And so I was really excited to eat a cheeseburger in the White House during Beef Month. I thought it was going to be really cool. So I get there, and they bring it out, and it's got the White House seal seared on top of the burger. I mean, how do you eat that? I mean, I just took a picture of it. I mean, I eat the fries and the other stuff. I mean, how do you eat that burger after you've seen the White House emblem seared on top of a burger bun? So it's pretty neat things that I get to do. But whenever we go up there, what we're doing is we're advocating on behalf of Kentucky and on behalf of our rural areas and our farmers. And I want to tell you a few things that I see that are happening right now. And I know many of us out here, grain farmers and others, are really nervous about where we're at in the world today with tariffs, with input costs, with a lot of stuff that's happening. And I want to tell you that I know personally firsthand by the conversations that I've had in Washington that they are working. They understand it. They see it. They know what's happening right now. And they're working towards trying to get some solutions to these things. We didn't get here overnight. When Trump left office, we were at a surplus on trade. Right now, we're at a $50 billion deficit whenever he came into office back in January. And so as we look at the problems that we're facing, we've been in a depressed market for the last 3 years around our grain operations. Many of your farmers in this community have eaten through a lot of their operating capital over that period of time. And so we're looking at some pretty rough times that are getting ready to come next year without some relief, without some market availability. And so a lot of the things that they've worked on in Washington, when you rip up 193 trade deals across the world, it's hard enough to get one, let alone 193 of them. And so what I have seen and some of the stuff that I've had to learn, because I'm not a trade expert, is whenever we're making these deals where we've got deals with the EU, we've got deals with Bangladesh, India, Indonesia, some of these deals that are coming out, the language is a little bit different. Saying a deal is a little different than a framework. And what we're seeing is these are frameworks that they're putting together that then get sent over to the USDA to where that they can start working on actually getting numbers behind these deals so the market will move the way that it needs to. And so in having the conversations that we've had, they're working on those every single day. The person who's in charge of that at the USDA's name's Luke Lindberg. And Luke is from North Dakota, and I've had very intimate, very serious conversations with him about the work that they're doing. And they are there working every single day. We were able to see some of the context of what they're trying to accomplish with some of these trade deals that they're working on, not just with China that we see in the news every single day, but others. But the thing that I want you to know about the conversations that I'm able to see and hear is that when we were in the White House this last time, we were having breakfast, and Jamison Greer was in there, Sean Duffy, and Secretary Rollins. And whenever we walked in, Secretary Rollins said, "When are we getting the China deal done?" You know, she's wanting to know this with Jamison Greer and having that conversation. And he said, "Look, we're working on it every single day, but China wants Trump to come out and say that they're not bad actors in the world, that they're not buying farmland in America, that they're not stealing our intellectual property, that they're not playing in geopolitical areas where they're creating wars in other countries. And we just can't do that as a country to give up our sovereignty of where we live today in order to get a deal on trade." And so what they're working towards is, how do we make this happen and how do we make this work? President Trump's heading to China again, I think in 4 weeks is what we saw last week. But one of the things that we've seen is the reports coming out that they have transferred over, I think, $14 billion into the CCC fund that hopefully will be relief that will be coming after the shutdown happens for our farmers that are in our grain markets right now, so that we can see relief bridged until we can get these markets open back up. They're working diligently every day on things like E15 year-round sustainable aviation fuel, looking at the RINs per gallon to help open up a lot of the domestic consumption that we're needing in America today. Just on our corn market alone, we're 2 billion bushels in surplus. And that's really where our market is failing right now, is that we have so much of production that we've got in our storage facilities, 2 billion bushels of that, that's why our markets are in a depressed area right now, from $7 4 years ago to $4 now. And that's a big hit for our farmers to take, especially around some of our yields that we're seeing coming out now. And so as you all are out in your communities and you're talking to your farmers, encourage them, talk to them, listen to them, be with them, because what we're seeing is a problem in mental health specifically. And we've got a program at the Department of Agriculture, Raising Hope, that we work with our farmers every single day. But if you can imagine the leverage that a lot of our farmers, especially some of our young ones, are in with the bank loans that they have out, with the equipment sales that they, or the equipment costs that they have, the input costs, just make sure that you're talking to your neighbors and that you're seeing them and you're encouraging them. But we work every single day to help bridge those gaps between a lot of what we're seeing on the ground in rural Kentucky and with our farmers to policymakers that are not just in Washington, but also here in Frankfort. And so we're working every day at the Department of Ag on things that we can control. You know, me as Commissioner of Agriculture, not being the President of the United States, or not being in Congress, or not being in the executive branch. I can't make deals on behalf of America, but what I can do is work with these wonderful legislators to work on how we do agriculture in this state. So I want to give you a few things that we're working on right now. When you think about how we get rid of the products that we have, if we send it on a barge, a truck, or a rail, we're making money on it, and we're providing for that area around the world and other areas. You know, I always thought for myself that if we got it on that barge, that rail, or that truck, that was where we needed to go, you know, open up this global marketplace. But as we see turmoil, as we see uncertainty, as we see chaos a lot of times around the world, what we need to be able to do is control our own destiny as much as possible right here in Kentucky. And so when you think about something like the ethanol plant over in Hopkinsville, when they buy a bushel of corn and they just sell it, they make 5 cents a bushel on that bushel of corn. But if they make it into ethanol, dried distillers grain, CO2, the byproducts that come off of making that ethanol, they add a dollar in value to that same bushel of corn, 20 times greater value in that processing of that product. Same thing happens at Cargill and Owensboro. The same thing happens in our poultry industry with Tyson and Pilgrims and Purdue. The same thing happens in our pork industry with JBS. The more that we can add value to those products right here in the state of Kentucky through processing, further processing, aggregation, controlling that own destiny that we have. Could you imagine where our grain markets would be right now, Wayne, if we didn't have the ethanol plant, Cargill, our feed mills for our poultry operations? We'd be in a lot worse shape than we are right now. And so it is so important for us to work around economic development in agriculture to get that end user, to attract those businesses here or build them up. And so we, in conjunction with the legislature and their foresight, have created the Ag Economic Development Fund at the Department of Agriculture to work in conjunction with our Economic Development Cabinet, not to take anything away from them, but to really focus on what matters in agriculture. Because a lot of times we don't create the jobs at a facility that warrants the economic development incentives that the cabinet can give out. But what we do have is massive impact in communities. So when you think about a poultry operation, if you get that facility that's here, you're talking about 12 to 1,300 jobs in there processing those poultry every single day. But there's hundreds of farmers that are growing those chickens and hundreds of those farmers that are growing that corn. There's hundreds of truck drivers that are taking it there. So the impact beyond a facility that we have around processing and further processing is meaningful impact in our communities to where that we can really control that next step and getting us closer from the farm gate to the food plate. So that's a lot of what we're working on around our grain markets. It's a lot of what we're working on around our livestock operations, especially poultry, pork, and cattle. Some of the other programs that we're trying to help with to make sure that we're giving extreme value back to our producers is around our specialty crops. When you think about where we are today in our school systems, a lot of attention has been around this MAHA movement nationally of how do we get our kids healthier through the food that they eat. Some statistics that were staggering to me is that we have about 650,000 school students in public schools here in Kentucky. We feed about 174 million meals in those schools throughout the state. And less than 4% of that is locally grown produce or protein that comes in from local farms across the state of Kentucky. Not one person that we've talked to, whether they be a school board member, a teacher, school service director, superintendents, principals, say, no, we're good. We don't want to do anything about it. Everybody wants to work on this to make it better, to where we can get to 10, 15, 20, 30, 50% of this coming from our local farms. And that's local impact that we would be having and local prosperity and profitability to our farmers across the state. We import into America 2/3 of the fruits and vegetables that we consume right here in the United States. It's unacceptable that we've gotten to this point. And it's only because we've put barriers in place around procurement, around sourcing, around so many other things. So we've been diving in for the last year at the Department of Agriculture, working with our Department of Education to identify things that we can take to Washington to say, get this junk out of the way and let people do this, to, so that we can go to the legislature and talk to them about some of the procurement barriers that are in place or encouraging a local first policy around buying food for our local schools in the state of Kentucky. It's going to be more nutritious, it's going to be healthier, it's going to be more readily available, and it's an opportunity for us to educate our kids in schools about where their food comes from. Putting that picture up of a farmer saying that this is where your tomatoes are from, and maybe even having them come to the cafeteria one day to meet them. You know, it's an education opportunity that we can have. We're really excited about the work that we're doing on that, but I tell you what I'm most excited about that I get to do is what Alan was talking about earlier, our All In for Ag education programming that we've put together. We're leading the nation after 1 year of implementation of elementary ag education in Kentucky. And what I mean by that is we've worked with the Kentucky Department of Education, with our office, to create curriculum that fits directly into the standards for our teachers so that we're not adding extra on them in the classroom, that we're adding a benefit to them to where they can take agriculture and teach math, science, reading, other things and other subjects. And so we've dedicated 2 weeks a year. We did one back in March. We just finished one in September. And some of the most amazing things that I saw was these teachers teaching in their classroom education around agriculture, and most of them had no agriculture experience whatsoever. I'll tell you two things that just blew my mind. Back in March, we went into Jefferson County in Louisville, and many of y'all are like, Louisville, Jefferson County, agriculture, don't fit. Well, I promise you, it is our largest asset, in my opinion, that we have in agriculture in the state of Kentucky. JBS is there, Churchill Downs, Kentucky Venues, where we have the Farm Machinery Show, where we have the State Fair. We have all the restaurants that are Kentucky proud, all the restaurants that are consuming food. We have five major hospitals that are there that consume food every single day. I think it's about 25% of the students in the state of Kentucky go to schools in Louisville and Jefferson County. And so when you think about them as an asset for agriculture, it's one of the largest ones that we have. But these teachers are not ag people, and so they had to learn this stuff before they taught it. So we go into this classroom, and I've just gotten so excited. We've had 3 days of experiences throughout the state, whether it's in Boyle or Bourbon or somewhere else, and teachers were teaching ag, and it was really cool. It was awesome. It was amazing. And I go into this classroom in Jefferson County, and her name was Miss Green, and I walk in, and she's got these kids on a computer playing Minecraft. And I was like, man, is this what we're doing? We're just putting kids in front of a computer playing Minecraft. And, you know, does everybody know what Minecraft is? A lot of gray hair in here. I just checking. All right. Y'all got grandkids, though. You know what it is. But so I walk in, they're around these computers, and I was disappointed. You know, I was like, what are we doing? You know, is this really what we're doing? So I look at their, I start talking to the kids, and Miss Green had a worksheet that was on there, and this was a math class. And so they're on Minecraft, and I start talking to these kids, and I asked them what they're doing. They were building a farm on Minecraft. And so what they did was they had this worksheet, and they had to do four things on it. They had to build a farmhouse, they had to build a barn, they had to build livestock pens, and they had to build a crop area. Garden or crop or whatever they were doing. And then they were having to take the math formulas that they have been learning, and they had to put in the figures so that they would get the perimeter, the diameter, all the things that went along with that, to where that's what she was teaching them that day. So I got excited, and I went up and started talking to her, and she said, I'm not even done yet. She said, tomorrow I'm giving them a products list with the pricing on it so they can see how expensive it is to farm, so they can put together what a board foot is and how much it costs and all the animals and the livestock and how much hay they have to buy, how much they have to calculate for these things, using math, making learning relevant to them, a vibrant learning experience. Absolutely amazing work that they're doing. Another one that we had back in September that was really cool this past September was we were in Red Cross Elementary, and Scott Johnson's the elementary school teacher of the year this year. Walk in, and he doesn't have a classroom. His classroom was the hallway of the second floor foyer of their school. And it looked like Bill Nye the Science Guy. Had 3D printers everywhere, had all these models, all these things out. And so we're up there, and this guy's as energetic as you'd want a teacher to be, like a guy who loved his job. And we start looking at it, and Wayne, what they were using was corn plastic, the PLAs out of corn, and they were 3D printing in the school. And so he was talking to them about the biodegradability, the sustainability, how the farming works, how they get this stuff processed, how they get it to there, how they work on these things. But he had been teaching them CAD to these elementary school kids, and they have unlimited access to these 3D printers, so they go home, they can create whatever they want, and then they can come to school and get them printed. Well, you may have seen it on Facebook, it kind of went viral a little bit, but there was a kid who didn't have a hand, and so he had whatever you call that, where he had it taken off. And so what they had done was those kids had created, through that classroom, a prosthetic PLA 3D printed prosthetic for that kid and gave it to him out of that classroom using biodegradable corn plastic that was from agriculture. Just absolutely amazing, this work that's happening in our classrooms across the state of Kentucky. What was so interesting to me is how advanced and how accelerated learning is today. I don't think you all, like me, would recognize what a lot of our kids are learning today because of how advanced and accelerated that we've gotten to. So I'm pretty excited about where we are in agriculture today, about the direction that we're going. We've got some tough times in many areas that we're in right now. We've got input costs that are high. We've got markets that need to be open. But there are people that are understanding. There's people that are working on this every single day, including myself, to try and make these things better, to give new and better opportunities for rural prosperity in our rural communities. And I just want to say thank you to you all for allowing me to be here today and allowing me to be your agriculture commissioner. I get the opportunity to work with a lot of different people and to be out throughout the state. And Austin Weatherington's here from Congressman Comer's office, and you know, he's become a little bit of a celebrity. I don't know if you all have seen him on Fox News. If you've been watching TV, you've seen him everywhere. And so I tell people that Jamie is a little bit of a celebrity these days. You know, we all know him, we all see him, but he's become a celebrity. And I want you all to know that I'm a celebrity as well. And I'm going to tell you how I know this. I'm a celebrity amongst a very specific demographic in this state. It is 15 to 19-year-olds in FFAs in Kentucky. And so I went and I spoke to their state convention this past year. And I love FFA. I was Sentinel Vice President, State Star in 2006. FFA is what gave me my leadership. So I go and I speak to them, and I decided that I was trying to figure out, how am I going to talk to these kids? How am I going to connect with them? What am I going to do? So I wrote them a love letter. And I gave this speech, and it was a love letter to the FFA, and I get done, and I feel like I have really connected with them. So I go sit down, and Jeremy's sitting beside me, my executive assistant, and I look at him, and I'm asking him, you know, some questions, and I look, and there's this 16-year-old girl sitting in the row behind me, and she is waving profusely to get my attention. I mean, just like a fool, just waving. And I see her, and I look at her, and she goes like this. If you were me and you saw that, what would you think? She wanted your autograph. So she gets up, and she comes over, and she sits down behind me. And I said, sweetheart, where do you want me to sign? And she said, no, sir, can I borrow your pen? So there are humbling moments as a celebrity, being the commissioner of agriculture. But I want to close by just saying, you know, we're in different times right now. I think things feel different on the national level. The vitriol that we've got in politics, the way that people are talking to each other, social media and all that stuff. I think that this is why community events like this are so important, because it is really hard to say things whenever you're in person. It's really hard to have a bad opinion of somebody whenever you're doing that stuff. I tell people all the time, it's a lot harder for somebody to tell me no when they like me. And so building those relationships, having these personal interactions, these one-on-ones, not to get isolated and secluded to where that you're sitting there in an echo chamber and just hearing this kind of stuff every single day. If you are aggravated and frustrated with where politics are, where the news is, whatever it is, shut off the TV, shut off your social media, go to one of these local FFA or 4-H chapters across this state, and you will see some amazing work being done by the next generation. If you are finding it hard to believe in something now of what you're seeing, go and talk to these young kids and these youth across the state. You will find something to believe in. And for me, especially since what happened a couple of weeks ago with Charlie Kirk, I have been trying not to be angry in my life at what we're seeing. And what it really has made me do is look at what's important. And so for me, what I have come to the conclusion of as a follower of Jesus Christ myself is that when I get the pearly gates, he's not going to ask me if I was a good ag commissioner. He's not going to ask me if I had money in the bank. He ain't going to ask me if I had 10 friends or 200 friends. He ain't going to ask me a lot of these questions of what I did. He's going to look at me and say, come in, thou good and faithful servant, or depart from me, I never knew you. And so that relationship with Jesus Christ and where that is the most important thing that we can be focused on. And how we do that in our lives and how we have these conversations and how we conduct ourselves in the positions that we have, I think, are really important. And so I'm trying to redirect my own life of, how do I put that back in my family? How do I put it back in my job? How do I put it back in my farming operation, the relationships that I have? And I would just encourage you all, as we go throughout and we're community members in this state, here in Trigg County, here in Cadiz, is that we think about that before we do anything else. And I think that we can have a lot better outcomes with what we're working on. I appreciate the opportunity to laugh with you this morning, to preach at you a little bit. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to be your commissioner of agriculture, to step my feet on the ground every single day and work on your all's behalf. Thank you all so much.